Blog Talk Radio.
All right, welcome to the Today's You podcast. I'm your host, Colin Sylvester. We're going to be talking about some news and spring game reviews on the college football side, also on the college basketball side, lots of things going on in the recruiting world, and on the other side of players leaving college and declaring for the NBA draft. Let's start with things on the football side, though. We have Dustin and Alex joining us. Hey, guys, how's it going?
Hey, what's up, Colin?
Hey, what's up, Colin?
Hey, Colin.
Not too much. So one thing we'll start with here is a news story that came out yesterday, Lou Holtz leaving ESPN, kind of a polarizing figure. And Dustin, you have a really interesting story that will be going up on FanRag Sports as one of the feature stories there as soon as this podcast is over. And you took a pretty hard stance against pretty much Lou Holtz and I guess the bias that he shows on TV. Do you think it is a good thing for the viewing on Saturdays and for college football for fans that he's leaving? I sort of saw it as an endearing quality that he would, you know, pull for the Irish so much, but I can see how it come off the wrong way. Do you think it is a healthy move for ESPN and for gaining viewership there?
Well, I don't know if about gaining viewership, but I think for the toleration for people like myself who, you know, I just get tired of the whole rah-rah story from guys like Lou Holtz who just pull for one team consistently. Obviously, broadcasting and doing some analysis in college football and all of the sports has changed since it first started, and having to be just that one neutral guy who was, you know, playing fair to all those sports. I think there's a little bit of a fan perspective that he brought, and I think that was tolerated in the very beginning, you know, knowing he won a national championship at Notre Dame, knowing he coached there for 11 years, and that's where his heart really was. But, you know, to consistently pick Notre Dame to win national championships or compete on a BCS level or a college football playoff level when they were finishing 3-9 and 6-6, just that kind of old and tiring. And I think it'll be a nice little bit of a refresher to have somebody new in there take his place. If they want to have him on as a guest every now and again to talk X's and O's, I'm all for it. But I just got tired and fed up with these constant selection and talk of Notre Dame and its numerous hyphen candidates on a weekly basis.
Yeah, it does seem like sports media in general is going more towards trying to have more of the fan perspective. That FanRag is all about that. It's in the name. And there's a lot of other outlets trying to do that. Alex, do you think that's a trend that we'll see more and more on the TV side, not just with websites? Or is it something that at some point they're going to draw a line, whether it's this case Lou Holtz or anybody else? Do you think they'll draw the line and never really get it as far as a lot of these sports media websites that are around now?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think you're talking a good point. And one of the writers in our organization, obviously, Tommy Stokes, he's pretty prominent and does a lot of good writing. He mentioned me one of the first he made it pretty clear that, you know, we're not, you know, guys like that, and we're not guys like Report. We don't necessarily, you know, bash these people or talk bad about them in that perspective. So it obviously brings people in towards us. But, you know, Justin talked about Lou Holtz and whatnot and the bias. And, you know, you can't necessarily say that while he is a face of college football, he's not, you know, comparable to a guy like Jim Scully with the LA Dodgers, where you want to hear him talk, you know, for hours on end, and you can watch the game and hear him talk nonstop. I mean, it's a valid point to, you know, say that he's a face of college football and whatnot like that. But there's a time when you have to ponder and think, is the guy just stressing out, you know, the party a little bit too long and stuff? So, personally, I'm not going to lose sleep over somebody who talks about Notre Dame 24/7 because I'm a Michigan fan. So, while Lou Holtz was, like I said, kind of a foundation for college football. I'm definitely not going to be getting tired of hearing, you know, the Hurst and, you know, the Heath Davis is college football like that. So I think it was the right time for the whole Heath time and whatnot.
Yeah, you bring up Reese Davis, and I think it is something we're seeing a lot this year with College Game Day. Both College Game Day and possibly Lee Corso. I mean, he's got to be, you know, in his later years of that show. Another guy, Dick Vitale, which also is kind of, I don't know if you want to say demoted, but not the A-team in terms of ESPN broadcasters. So a lot going on in that world. We'll get to the field now, though. Alex, you had an interesting story on Michigan State, kind of recapping their offense by the numbers 2014, even saying that for next year they might be a little bit overvalued to the point where this offense, it's assumed that they're going to put up a lot of points, but they don't have those playmakers on the outside like they've had the last couple of years. Is Michigan State to you, Alex, has it gotten to the point where we're overvaluing them because of the program name, because they've been successful the last 2 years? Are they at that point, or is this more just because they put up a lot of numbers, people are going to assume they'll be good the next year too?
Right. Well, I mean, when you look at it, it's tough right now to even pinpoint the word value in general, given that if Michigan State or any Big Ten team, for that matter, plans to make a run towards the national championship, there's a more than likely chance it has to bust through the obstacle that is the Ohio State Buckeyes. So while I do like Connor Cook, back with that, obviously, I mean, given the guys that have been result as a regular starter, I mentioned replacing Tony Licker, a guy that I thought really got the best year that in this offense transitioned more of a spread it out type of offense. I think Alabama and Michigan State are two teams that really got out of their comfort zone of, you know, taking the ball off and missing the clock and kind of push the ball a little bit more. But the place where they excel is on college, and they do bring back the number one rushing defense in the country, and Dustin knows all of these guys pretty well, and Sharique Calhoun, Joel Heath, Lawrence Thomas, they're all on the D-line in return. So I expect the defense to be heavy. But the one thing that continues to stick out to me, you know, looking at Michigan State and looking at their chances, is just that the 49 points they gave up to the Buckeyes last year in these things. And, you know, while it's extremely difficult to even compete in the national championship, you look at Ohio State with Elliott and Jones and, you know, arguably the best coach in the country, Urban Meyer. I'm not exactly sure what the analysts or the experts or even, you know, the writers from the State are saying about Sparty for the host president. But I also think that Dustin is pretty bad argument for they're maybe part of Big Ten and how they could pose a potential threat in the conference, okay, short on us. So while I do think Michigan State will be great once more in their traditional powerhouse, I don't think they're going to be the team that plays with Dragon and just keep the team down to a half.
Dustin, you cover the Big Ten for Today's U. What is it going to take for Michigan State to get over that last hump where they're winning 10 games a year now? They're right there close to getting to play for a national championship the past two seasons, but they're not quite there. Is it going to take a Heisman season from Connor Cook, or what is it going to take for them to reach that Ohio State level? Not necessarily in terms of program prestige, but getting over the hump and into playing in those games for the national championship.
Well, I think you saw it a season ago with what they were able to accomplish offensively, and I really enjoyed Alex's article on that. I think he brought up some really good points looking at some of the statistics. And, you know, this was a team in 2013 that was nearly stagnant offensively, and they were still able to win football games. Last year, their defense dropped off a little bit, but the offense picks up the slack, and their schedule was just tough. I mean, they had Oregon and Ohio State were the only two losses, and those were two teams that could competed for the national championship. So I don't know that necessarily Michigan State's really that far away as a program or as a team for competing for a national championship. They just got a tough schedule. Now they'll have Oregon in East Lansing this season, and they'll travel to Ohio State this year. I think Oregon might be a little bit less aggressive this season, and Michigan State might be able to win that football game. Going to Ohio State, playing in the shoe is going to be tough. I think they've got the talent there. I think it's just going to have to take an off night from Ohio State, because I don't think this team is really that far off. It'll be interesting to see how the defense responds without Pat Narduzzi, you know, assistant coach of the year, and one of the best defensive coordinators in the country when he was in East Lansing. So we'll see how the defense responds. But I think the team's right there. They just had some bumps in the road as far as scheduling is concerned. I mean, even if you win one of those two games, either against Oregon or against Ohio State, you might be reaching the college football playoff last year.
Yeah, you could definitely see that happening. And that's a great answer, because it is a perfect segue into our next question or segment here. Pat Narduzzi did make it Michigan State, that is, one of the best defenses in the nation. He heads down to be the head coach at Pitt. Another interesting first-year head coach that Ryan Wooden had an article on today is SMU's Chad Morris, came over from Clemson. Alex, do you there? They're two guys with pretty different backgrounds, but are getting their first shot at being a head coach. Who do you think has the most successful first year as a head coach, I guess, compared to the expectations they have? SMU, you know, they have been to bowl games recently, but the expectations might not be as high for Pitt. Who do you think pleases the fan base, I guess, most in their first year, Narduzzi or Chad Morris?
Well, I guess when you look at who's going to have the better first year, Narduzzi and Pitt really look like the easy choice in regards to that question. I mean, and that's only considering that SMU was quite possibly the worst team to watch a season ago, and it was just pure brutality. I will give Chad Morris and the Mustangs one mention of optimism, and I'll say that the only way to go is up. And I mean it when I say that this is a team who could not perform worse than they did last year. And if they do, then the program should be banished and put on trial from teaching people. Because I spent countless Saturdays checking box scores of exercise and seeing AAC teams absolutely light up the scoreboard on them. Their offense was one of the worst to watch in person. I think Narduzzi will have a better first year. I do like it. It's one of those middle of the road teams, but as far as career wise, I do actually like Chad Morrison. Pitt, to me, I mean, you know, Colin, you're an ACC guy. It just seems to me like the Panthers are always just that middle of the pack ACC team that you can't break through. And I think once SMU kind of gets all their jazz figured out, you know, maybe Morris can connect some athletes down in Texas to play at, you know, Baylor or TCU or Texas. Plus, you look at the conference, and I think the edge has to go to SMU in means of improving. So, first year, I like Narduzzi coming in. Career-wise, I will take Morris and SMU, however.
Yeah, I think there's so many more top recruits in Texas. There's more talent to draw from there. That being said, SMU isn't in one of the Power Five conferences. Dustin, do you think that in order for Chad Morris to really replicate what a program like Baylor has done, do they have to find their way into a power program in order to get to that point? Or is there a way to do it where they become one of these dominant non-Power 5, one of the Group of 5 teams like a Boise State, and they can compete for national titles that way?
Yeah, it's possible. I don't think it's very likely, though. I do like the comments from you and Alex, though, talking about recruiting, because I think it will be a little bit easier for Chad Morris, at least getting the ball rolling, because in the AAC conference, you're not expected to get the top-tier recruits. You're not expected to get the five-star or the five-star caliber quarterback for the blue-chip recruits every year. And that's going to be what Pat Narduzzi is up against with dealing with the ACC, and then see a Big Ten expansion with Maryland, much less with Penn State. He's going to have his hands full. So SMU, I think, is going to have the opportunity to be a really, really good football team a lot quicker than what Pitt would be. I don't think that they're going to have that talent level that we saw, you know, in the 70s and 80s with the Pony Express and the 30 for 30. I think those days are probably gone unless they do join a Big 12, if they get an invitation or, you know, join one of those Power 5 conferences. But it's still possible to be a really good football team and compete on the national level, you know, with double-digit win seasons and things of that nature, even when you're not getting your top talent, even if you're not in the Power 5 conference. I just don't see, and this goes for any group of five team, I don't see any way with your college football playoff and the emphasis on conference championships and strength of schedule, I don't see how there's any way a group of five team can compete for a national championship unless something changes.
Yeah, I would love to see both SMU, maybe even Houston, join the Big 12. I think the potential for those programs is really high. You also have, I mean, just from a money standpoint, those are big media markets. A lot of positives for those schools if the Big 12 does eventually add some more members. But thank you guys for all your college football insight. You can check out Alex and Dustin on Twitter and read them multiple times a week on Today's You. Those Twitter handles for Alex, AlexK_47, and for Dustin, @Sharp_Shooter. That's SCHUTTER. Thanks, guys.
All right, thanks a lot, man.
Thanks, Colin.
All right, let's move on to some college basketball. We're into the college basketball all season now. But plenty going on in the recruiting world and players going to the next level of the NBA. First caller we have is Bobby Reagan. How's it going, Bobby?
Hey, Colin.
So one of the biggest topics, especially the last few days, has been this big exodus from both Kentucky with 8 players going, but also Duke with a big exodus, not at the same time, but they are losing now Okafor, Justice Winslow, and Tyus Jones. Who do you think of those 2 teams will be able to recover the quickest for next season? Because Kentucky, yes, loses so many more players, but they also bring in a bunch too. Duke isn't quite used to the type of exodus that we've seen this year for them. So of those 2 programs, these are clearly blue blood programs. Which one can recover the quickest in terms of replacing that talent to you?
I think it's Kentucky. Duke also loses 20 plus to graduation, so they have to replace a whole lot more in the starting five than Kentucky, especially with the way Kentucky ran that platoon system. Yeah, there was a starting five, but you get a little nicer players coming back to Kentucky with some experience. You know, Porter Ferris, Lee, and Euless. That's not a bad 4-3 to have. Duke, you know, Grayson Allen, but he just really came on in the championship game. He was really inconsistent throughout the whole year. You know, both have top 5 recruiting classes coming in. Obviously, you got to see how the game transitions. But I think Kentucky set up a little bit better than Duke heading into the early part of next year.
Yeah, Kentucky is definitely more used to replacing that type of talent. We'll bring some ACC perspective on here with Andrew Beverly. Bev, how's it going?
Hey, doing well, y'all. How are y'all?
Doing all right. So I don't know how much of Bobby's answer you heard. We're talking about replacing some of that talent at both Kentucky and Duke. With Tyus Jones going to the NBA now, what's the immediate fix for Duke? Where do they go? They were so good in guard play this year. It kind of carried them in the latter parts of the tournament. Where do they turn immediately in terms of guard play in Durham?
Okay, well, there's this guy who's currently in the class of 2016, plays at Finley Prep. His name is Derek Thornton. He's currently the second best point guard in the 2016 class. And I know he's been talking to Duke about possibly reclassifying to 2015. So if they're able to pull that off, they should be just fine because he's amazing. In the point guard department, that is. But sorry, I'm getting so much feedback on my phone right now.
Yeah, I'm hearing that too.
Yeah.
If you need to, you can call back. But you,
I think
you
it's
bring up.
In college. I heard it when I was waiting with football.
Really? See if that works. Bev, you bring up a good point. Sort of an it's been an odd week in recruiting. We have had some reclassifications. You had an article today on sort of the continuation of that exodus from VCU. What's sort of the latest in recruiting this week, and where do you think some of these players are going to fall, especially the ones that are making this, I guess, a package deal in the recruiting world and almost saying, where this person goes, I'll go too. Do you see any combos declaring soon here?
Yeah, you know, I don't think we're going to have a package deal because that was kind of ruined. The big one was Ivan Rabb, Caleb Swanigan, and Jalen Brown all going to Cal. And Swanigan was the first to declare. He went to Michigan State. And then Rabb decided to stay close to home, go to Cal. And now Jalen Brown is kind of up in the air. Nobody really knows where he's going to go.
Well, I was going to say that it does seem like one program that sort of has capitalized on, I don't know if combos is the best way to put it, you know, the if you go there, I'll go there. Mm-hmm. But Kentucky has done that in a sense where one of the biggest selling points for Kentucky is that all the other best players are going. Bobby, do you think that's something that is going to become a selling point at these programs almost in a more formal way where they'll try and recruit players and say to them, if you come here, we can get this player to come here? Or is that something that really just happens through great recruiting by a John Calipari?
I think it's a combination. I don't think Calipari's going in preaching, you know, hey, if you come here, then I know for sure Malik Newman will come here. I think it's more on the kids, you know, they kind of sit there and talk about, hey, imagine if we all go to Kentucky or if we all go to Duke. You know, we're automatically a top five team, da-da-da. It is part of the recruiting because Calipari's just a great recruiter. But I think he preaches more long-term, hey, look what I can do. Look what I did for Daniel Orton, DeAndre Liggins. I got them into the pros and drafted. So I think that's the way he kind of approaches it.
You can also see it a bit on the other side, at least with players leaving school. It does seem like there are some joint decisions. Again, the great example is Kentucky with 8 players leaving. It could have been 9 if Poitras hadn't been hurt. Bobby, you had an article this week on as a reaction to Ron Baker and Fred Van Vliet staying at Wichita State. Everybody says, awesome, they were in the top 10 this year, more experience, they'll be just as good next year. But you're hesitant to go that far with Wichita State. What is it to you that's holding Wichita State back, which is a program that is retaining players as opposed to others that are losing all these guys to the draft? With that experience, what's the hesitation there with Wichita State?
We know what Wichita State is. The best comparison heading into the NBA playoff is the Washington Wizards. The Wizards were supposed to take a jump this year after winning the playoff series last year. You know, they're supposed to contend with Cleveland as in the Eastern Conference Finals this year, and they're a 5-seed again. That's exactly what Wichita State is. We know who Fred Van Vliet is. We know who Ron Baker is. They're not going to get challenged in the Missouri Valley. They're going to end up being, you know, a 5-seed, 6-seed in the NCAA tournament, probably make the Sweet 16, and that's it. Their run to the Final Four a couple of years ago is going to be an aberration. You know, they're not at the level of Gonzaga yet. They're pretty similar with VCU, maybe a year below them. But there's nothing to be real excited about. I mean, Fred Van Vliet isn't coming back as, you know, Kevin Pangos. He's not coming back as that star point guard. Ron Baker isn't coming back any more athletic or a better defender. They are who they are at this point in time.
So if that's the case, and it's not like what Wichita State is bad right now. I think it's definitely a good team, but it is a good point that the ceiling is a little lower for them as opposed to some of these programs that get the recruiting classes that the Blue Bloods get. So, Bev, I'll ask you a similar question to what we started with Bobby when we were talking about how these programs are losing a bunch of players can recover. Do you think Wichita State can compete with programs that are turning over guys so quickly on a consistent basis when they do bring all this experience, even if it's not the same talent level? We've seen a couple of years in a row now where Wichita State got into the tournament and didn't do as well. Well, this year, I mean, you have to give them credit for beating Kansas.
Yeah.
But can they do that consistently without guys who seem like they're there for 6 years? Or is it when these two guys leave Wichita State, they're pretty much done. There's no way they can keep competing with the Kansases and the Kentuckys of the world.
As much as I hate to say it for Wichita State fans, I do think I don't want to say they're done because I think Greg Marshall is a good coach, but they're definitely not going to be good. I mean, and I think kind of as Bobby was saying, you know, Gonzaga has had all this consistency, and VCU has too. But I mean, at the same time, these guys are four-star recruits they're bringing in. Like, they're bringing in top 100 guys every year. Well, VCU isn't now because they're the smartest on. But, I mean, Wichita State doesn't do that. They haven't gotten to that level yet. They're not bringing in players, I guess, good enough to continue to compete, I guess, is maybe the best way of putting it.
Well, plus Marshall's going to be on the way out in the next couple of years. There's a job out there he's waiting for.
What's the holdup, Bobby?
Yeah, for sure.
If he's had opportunities, what to you is the holdup for Greg Marshall? I know you're probably thinking of the article this week. It was really interesting. You're talking about the who the coaches will be, the next coaches for all the top programs, and Greg Marshall was all over that list. But what's holding him back from taking one of these jobs?
He's being picked. To quote Seinfeld, he has hands. I mean, every big name, every time there's a big opening, the first name you're going to hear is Brad Stevens, Shaka Smart, and Greg Marshall. Well, now, Shaka Smart's out of that what? Brad Stevens, I don't think he's going to leave the NBA because he's getting better with Boston. So,
and he's really
Greg
good.
Greg Marshall's going to be that Shaka Smart now, where anytime a big job opens up, you're going to hear everyone saying, oh, is this the one Greg Marshall takes? So I think he's being, you know, he was second in line at Texas. I think if Smart would have passed, I think you would have saw Marshall go there. Marshall passed on Alabama
for sure
because it's not a great job. So he's just being picky more than anything else.
Right. And I think the one you predicted, was it Kansas for Greg Marshall?
No, North Carolina is where I think he'll
North Carolina, yep, that was it. Boy, that does seem like it would be a good fit. Who knows how long Roy Williams will be there, and he's very loved in Chapel Hill, but very interesting stuff.
Well, his coaching tree is all young. He doesn't have a coaching tree,
right.
You know, like his coaching tree is at UAB and at UNC Wilmington, so it's not like they can, quote, keep it in the family.
Right. Bev, we'll get one last take for you on the subject of these great coaches moving on from mid-majors. What does the next 5 years look like for VCU? Are they consistently making the Sweet 16 still? Are they making the tournament? Or are they kind of going to fade into not being relevant anymore once again? What's the next 5 years look like for them?
I love VCU.
Yeah, I love VCU.
I live in Virginia. I support them. Their games are incredible. I mean, Shaka Smart was the reason they were good. I mean, I don't see them really. I just can't see it. I mean, unless they get a great coach out of the blue, kind of like they did with Shaka Smart, I don't see them getting better.
Yeah, and you can already see, and you've covered pretty extensively, the exodus that is already underway at VCU in terms of both recruits and transfers. So it'll be tough for that program to stay where it is right now. Thanks, guys, for giving us all the latest on college hoops. You can check out Bobby and Bev multiple times a week on Today's You and follow them on Twitter. Bev is at Andrew_Bev. Bobby is at UKLefty22. Thanks so much, guys.
All right, thanks.
Thank you.
See y'all.
All right, well, make sure to tune into Today's You this weekend. We will be at the Ohio State spring game, getting lots of coverage from there. And we'll keep track of all the latest players on the college basketball side, both recruiting and guys making the jump to the NBA.